I wrote Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love at a time that in my adult life, not in my life as a whole, but in my adult life, was the most challenging period that I have had to endure. At the time that I wrote Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love, and for some years before and some years after, so over a 10-year period, I had the great privilege of being every fortnight on a quite wonderful program in Australia that used to be hosted by Geraldine Doog and was called Life Matters. And every fortnight I was the person that she spoke to on matters that I had intuited my way towards thinking that they were of wider relevance than to myself, which is the nature of universal inquiry. It matters to all of us. And the program was called On the Couch because, you know, I was supposed to be a psychotherapist. You know, in a way I was. But I was much more interested also in the questions of soul and how this affects conduct and how conduct affects the soul. But as my publishers often tell me, spirituality doesn't sell. They say that. They say that to me. They look me in the eye and they say, Stephanie, we're really sorry. But spirituality doesn't sell. It's kind of heartbreaking. Anyway, at that time, Geraldine and I were well in the swing of these fortnightly conversations that people were very interested in. And some of them had already been released as cassettes, I guess they were, or CDs, probably both. So in this terribly hard time, that was a very demanding time on me physically and psychically and had woken up all of my fears, particularly the fear that I would leave my children without a mother. I had to go past all the platitudinal remedies that I was very familiar with and think to myself, what would stand me in good stead? What is all that I can rely upon at this time? And actually, you might have thought I would say faith, but I don't think that even occurred to me. However, faith, or at least an experimenting with faith in the qualities that are divine, did occur to me. And so Geraldine and I, over a period of 12 weeks, went to those six qualities, which are generally known as the great humane virtues: courage, fidelity, restraint. Actually, I put restraint in there, though it is very much referred to in all the great spiritual philosophies, which is the pause. It's the moment of consciousness and conscience. It is the moment of choice. It is the moment, moreover, of awareness that we have a choice. So often we live in the land of choicelessness. And that is where defeat and despair live. When we feel we have no choices, when others have stripped us of choice, they've left us, they've abandoned our job, they've told us we're so unimportant, we don't matter, they've told us we are ugly, they have told us we are not wanted, they have told us their preferences are elsewhere. In those moments, we can feel as though we are choiceless. And then our context needs to be bigger. needs to be bigger. Courage, fidelity, restraint, generosity, and our awareness, perhaps, of where we lack generosity towards ourselves, because our generosity towards others will always, always reflect our generosity to ourselves. And please don't confuse this with a kind of material notion of self-protectiveness. That is not always generous, because it might forestall a generosity to others which would actually liberate us. To be able to say, no, I wasn't right. I was wrong. Goodness me, what generosity that gives to ourselves as well as to the other. Not even to do with forgiveness. Yeah? It's to do with generosity. I was wrong. I was idiotic. I am ashamed. I was shaming. My behavior was appalling. To be able to know and to be aware of it, to learn and move on, is an act of profound generosity towards ourselves. No, you know, the Buddhists so elegantly say about the three poisons of the mind, ignorance, the not knowing, ignorance, not knowing. And Jesus is so kind about this. He is so forgiving that the not knowing. But there is not knowing that's willful. When we turn away, when we turn our backs, when we pretend it doesn't matter, or when we blame the victim for their own pain. We do this on a gross scale, collectively and nationally, and we do it on a gross scale, often, personally, when we blame the victim for their pain. Tolerance. Isn't tolerance a tricky one? I mean, we're all good, kind, nice people. So what can't we tolerate? Well, probably the list is pretty long. We even can't tolerate much in ourselves. I mean, there is often much in ourselves that we are not actually tolerating or bringing sensitivity to or even awareness to. Everything that's in the shadow we couldn't tolerate. Everything that we pretend you did, but I didn't do it. That you causing, but I didn't cause it. That's my calling others bad, unclean, ignorant, impure. So, the three poisons, ignorance, not knowing. The second of them is a kind of double. Aversion and clinging. Clinging to our own point of view or whatever we think we're leaning upon, or aversion, a kind of disgust that also doesn't belong well in our sacred repertoire. Disgust does not serve us well. Shame can serve us quite well, but where disgust arises, please look at that with great compassion. What is my relationship to disgust? As long as I find things in myself to be disgusted by, I will project it onto others, and particularly onto kinds of others whom I don't know well, but I'm very free to judge. And our family history, the family history of humankind, is besieged with stories of disgust, heresy, impurity. This tribe against that tribe, and it goes to this present moment. Every time we define someone by a single adjective that is disparaging, we are projecting disgust. We need to be very, very careful about what disgust can teach us and how we can, in our own conduct, transform the degree of trust, the degree of disgust that is in the world. The third of the poisons is anger. Now, His Holiness himself, who's quite a good psychologist, I think, has said, anger can sometimes be useful, but only when it motivates conduct that is itself healing. Now, he said something else here about motivation that I think is really interesting. And I am talking about forgiveness, Robert. I am talking about forgiveness. Because what I'm really talking about here is the relationship we have to what we are becoming aware of. So, before I speak about, you know, motivation, I want to make that even clearer. Where we've harmed another, we are now aware of it. That's already such a gift. We haven't blamed the other for causing it. We haven't pretended that it didn't happen. We haven't said, oh, well, I was drunk at the time, as though that was an excuse. We haven't said, I chose to be drunk at the time, so I wouldn't know what I was doing. Yeah. We haven't said any of those things. Which are very commonly said, and sometimes even the law takes them seriously. Crimes of passion, for example. So we have already given ourselves a gift that we have allowed ourselves to own and know something about our conduct. This is already a profound gift of consciousness and of conscience. The people among us who are most dangerous are not only bereft in consciousness, or they believe their own thoughts that harm them and others. They believe them. They are bereft in consciousness. They are also bereft in conscience. And I want to say something very specific about that, that conscience is part of healing and wholeness. We cannot live morally in one part of our lives and not another without splitting ourselves and making healing impossible. We have to take consciousness and conscience into every part of our lives. In other words, you know, we can't be high-minded at home and an absolute tyrant to everybody at work, or vice versa. We cannot treat our pets sweetly and send other people to the gas chamber. We cannot praise our own understanding of Bach and Beethoven and Mozart and send people to the emotional gas chamber. When we talk about healing, we have to talk about wholeness. So simply having this gift of consciousness and conscience is already immense, and I want you to bring gratitude to it. This is part of forgiveness of oneself. In the gratitude that you bring to it, you will learn something from it. And there is no forgiveness worth a pinch of salt, worth a grain of salt, without learning something from it. Simply to go to the person and say, I'm truly sorry. This will not happen again. To do that is wonderful. It's essential. It's absolutely essential. How can I repair this? How can I make reparations? And you know, when Thich Nhat Hanh talks about this sort of thing, he always says, he wants you to say, darling. It's so sweet in his beautiful Vietnamese accent. He says, I want you to say, darling. And we're often far too self-conscious to say, darling. But he wants that. Darling, I am so sorry that I have hurt you. I am so sorry that my bluntness of mind allowed this. I see it differently now. I hope you can accept my apology. How can I heal this relationship between us? Because that is what is needed. The healing of the relationship, but this cannot happen. This is the most meaningful thing I might say to you all day. This cannot happen until you heal your relationship to forgiveness itself, as well as to what forgiveness has taught you. And how did it have the opportunity to teach you? It had the opportunity to teach you because you harmed. The harming itself was the beginning of the instruction. Yes, you harmed. Yes, you didn't mean to, but yes, you did. That action expressed something that is within you. How do you bring it from the shadow into the light? How do you bring it from the driven into the chosen? Yeah? From the driven into the chosen. Because we all are driven. This is the nature of human nature, that we're driven by our habits, by our unexamined impulses, by the conditioning of mind that we've received. All those messages about what was right and what was wrong and what we're entitled to and what we're entitled to do, our minds are conditioned. Our job, our honour, our discipline as seekers and as visionaries is to release with love what is not any longer serving us well. To release with love and gratitude what is not serving us well. To release with gratitude even what has harmed us and others, what has distorted the flow. Now, I spoke last night about Wu Wei so inadequately, but isn't that wonderful, because there's so much more to know about Wu Wei. But remember, one of the messages of Wu Wei is the naturalness of the flow. With gratitude, even to the obstacle that has impeded the flow. The stone that has been on the river. Yeah? I know this is not easy, but I don't know that there's any reason why it should be easy. Because it's got to meet such deep layers of mind conditioning. And yet, it can also be instant. It can also be instant. Amazing grace. I once was blind, but now I see. This doesn't mean that you won't still have to think very, very deeply about strategies, even, that you won't also need to use all of your intellect and experience to know what are the triggers, what are the words, what are the contexts, and they're not all in our heads. For example, sometimes we lash out when we're exhausted. Sometimes we think least clearly when we're hungry. or we're in just overburdened with a to-do list that stretches back to, you know, 2004. I want you also to look at the practical conditions under which hurt occurs. Let's be sensible about it. We're not just living in our heads. We're not just living in our souls. We're also living in our bodies. And our bodies have their limits. It can be very, very, very helpful to say sometimes, speaking for myself, this is not the time. And you will be pushed, because it may feel to the other person, this is exactly the time. But you know, for a flame to occur, a hurting flame, there has to be the what lights it and also the twig. In other words, where could there be more space within me in relationship to this struggle? I want to say something else too about the shadow. We don't know what our blind spots are until they manifest themselves in pretty overt terms. And the blinder the blind spot, the bigger the wake-up call needs to be. Is that true for you?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what our blind spots are. We don't know what the limits are of our generosity. We don't know what the limits are of our tolerance. We don't know what the limits are of our capacity for forgiveness until we really come up against it. You know, there's that saying, until you're between a rock and a hard place, until you are in that minuscule space between a rock and a hard place. And I have to say to you that, going back to my story, when I knew that my own knowledge was insufficient, I agreed with Geraldine that I would bring those subjects to bear publicly, because then I would have to go deep within them, confront myself within those contexts, which I did. It was very hard, and it was life-saving. And then after that, and with continuing process and difficulty and illumination. And illumination, not for myself only. I wrote the book called Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love. And I still live that book, in as much as I still deepen my matrimonial relationship. I am committed for a lifetime to those qualities. That means, and I think this is what matrimony is, and long matrimony I have not experienced, but some of you have. It means knowing freshly, more and more, and not resting on stale habits. Ailsa, you were married for such a long time to your husband, who's now not in the body, but he might be listening to us, with us. Yeah. And you must have needed that freshness. And he wanted you to go on having that freshness even after he wasn't here. And it's not freshness for yourself only. It's still freshness in your love for him, isn't it?
That's right. I feel his presence now.
I feel his presence now too. I feel the presence of all of our loved ones who are not here in the body. I feel the freshness of that so much. Because we are not married to that commitment for this life only. Well, we're not married with that commitment to love. And this is the last thing that I will say. That all of this awareness needs to be revealed to yourself in the context that you are already a being of love. This is all about self-knowledge within the context of love. The motivation quotation is very useful for that. When I am uncertain or distressed, now I want you to know who's saying this. This is His Holiness the Dalai Lama, whom you've idealized probably. So how refreshing it is to hear him say, when I am uncertain or distressed, he's in a human body. He will sometimes be uncertain or distressed, just as Christ was. When he cried, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Could there be a greater cry of uncertainty and bereavement? When I am uncertain or distressed, I look inside and I check my motivation. Motivation is key. If I am motivated by afflictive emotions, that is, emotions that harm and don't heal, I work on myself. That is, he would look into those afflictive emotions to say tenderly, darling, what are you telling me here? My boredom, my irritation, my impatience, my scorn, my judgment. Darling, what are you telling me here? If I am motivated, says His Holiness, by wholesome emotions or qualities or strengths, divine qualities, divine strengths, if I am motivated by love and not a self-righteous version of it, I'm only telling you this for your own sake, is never for the sake of the other. Never, ever is it for the sake of the other. I am only telling you this for your own sake is a statement of absolute, unreserved self-righteousness. Control and pompous authority. Block your ears. If I am motivated by wholesome emotions, if that is clear after careful examination, by which he means conscientious examination, what am I doing here? What am I causing here? Particularly, what am I causing here? Is this healing? Is this harming? Awareness tells us. Oh, our friend, awareness. Oh, Spirit. Oh, Spirit. If I am motivated by wholesome emotions, if that is clear after careful examination, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. That last statement is tricky. We could have a whole teaching on it, and it's nearly lunchtime. I'm going to leave you, therefore, as it's nearly lunchtime, with this poem. It's in Heaven on Earth, and it's from Loy Ching Yuen, who's a Taoist poet. Please close your eyes and just take in the sheer beauty of what your brother has brought you, Loy Ching Yuen. Your brother, Loy Ching Yuen. The fragrance of blossoms soon passes. The ripeness of fruit is gone in a twinkling. Our time in this world is so short. Better to avoid regret. In moments of darkness and pain, remember that everything is cyclical. Sit quietly behind your wooden door. Spring will come again. Om Shanti.